Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
Listen!
Well, hello there, Super Nintendos. What is going on? It is episode 588 of Nintendo Voice Chat. I am your host, Seth Macy. With me here today is Herr Schneider.
Good day, Mr. Macy.
Hello, hello. And industry legend, Kat Bailey.
Hello, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you are having a wonderful day of feasting.
Yes, I hope everyone is gorging themselves on all the sweet meats and treats that come with this part of the season. And speaking of holidays, this is a little bit of a different show because today we are going to be grading the Nintendo holiday season so far. And as you know, you have, by the time this airs, I think 30 days left to shop. And if you're holding off, don't. Because I don't know if you've been paying attention, but retail is a disaster this year. So if you've been putting it off, stop doing that immediately. Let's talk about Nintendo's holiday offerings for 2021. We have, of course, the SWOLED, which is the Switch OLED model, if you can find it. Animal Crossing has the DLC, which is changes the game enormously. There's Hyrule Warriors DLC. Smash got Sora, kind of a big deal. The last fighter for that enormous game. Little indie title called Metroid Dread is out right now. Mario Party Superstars. Of course, we've got Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. which was unfortunately marred by leaks ahead of time, but that's okay. Zelda's the Game & Watch Legend of Zelda Edition, Big Brain Academy, which I was not aware of, the N64 games and Genesis on the Switch Online expansion, which was marred by controversy. And third party, we have Shin Megami Tensei 5, Death's Door coming up, KOTOR, and of course, the GTA trilogy. Just kidding. Don't buy that one. That one gets an F. But
aw. Yeah, it's true. It's
can't even say an A for effort. You gotta be like, well, I guess like a D for effort.
It tried. Actually, no, it didn't. Never mind.
Sadly, no. So what are we thinking? How is Nintendo looking going into this holiday season, Kat? What are your thoughts?
Well, I give Nintendo's holiday season an E for exceeds expectations.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was going into this holiday season, I was like, I don't know. There are a lot of question marks. How will Metroid Dread do? Will the Switch OLED be the upgrade that people want? Can Shin Megami Tensei 5 be kind of a tentpole release? Does Nintendo have a tentpole release? The answer is yes. The Nintendo Switch OLED did, in fact, manage to provide real value. Metroid Dread ended up being that tentpole release that got in all of the Game of the Year list. And when I look from top to bottom from the Switch's holiday offerings, I'm like, this is actually a really good year for Nintendo. I think arguably better than last year.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. It wasn't until you were putting this list together in real time ahead of the show and breaking the fourth wall here that, and standing back and looking at it, I'm like, actually, yeah, Nintendo's got a pretty solid holiday lineup, especially when you compare it to what its major competitors have going on. I mean, Forza's a huge deal, and Halo is a huge deal, but
Nintendo doesn't have anything nearly as big as Halo. I'm sorry to say,
but you can actually just probably go and get a Switch, or you already have a Switch. That's, I think, the biggest bottleneck for both of its competitors is you still can barely get one of their consoles. Now, granted, you can't really get the Switch OLED that easily either, but you can still get a Switch fairly easily. So,
yeah. But I have a few friends who, when the Switch OLED came out, said, I'll get it later. And now it's constantly asking if anybody's seen them in stock. It's, if you slept on the OLED, it's just going to get harder and harder and harder. So if you do see one on shelves and you want it for later, just grab it now. My assessment of the holiday, of Nintendo's holiday this year, would be a B+. And that's because, precisely looking at the competition and seeing, what an amazing game Xbox has with Forza Horizon 5, and then obviously Halo coming out. It's got strong third-party stuff from Ubi and others. I feel like there's just one big title missing for Switch this year. And, I hate to say it, because, Metroid Dread is really, really cool, but, as a kind of like taking myself out of the equation and thinking about the game playing audience, it isn't the same as a 3D Mario, a 3D Zelda, or even a 3D Metroid, right? And then Mario Party Superstars is kind of like a return to classic Mario Party. So it's a really good game, but it's a collection. Pokemon is an adaptation of an old game. And so I'm missing that one big original, either new IP, like when Splatoon originally came out, or a major mainline 3D game. That said, all the games that are out are really cool. I love that we got the Zelda Game & Watch, which adds it's kind of this season's Nintendo, little Nintendo hardware toy concept, right? And then it's great to see some third-party stuff like SMT5 standing out. But again, we're also missing the top-selling games on the market. Not that I'm, clamoring to play a Call of Duty game on my Switch, but, there isn't that sort of, there's nothing to, scratch that shooter itch like there is with Call of Duty, Far Cry, Battlefield, all that hitting the other consoles. So that's my one note.
Thank God.
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
The Switch is an alternative system. It's an alternative thing that has a lot of stuff that you can't get on the other consoles. And even though Metroid Dread is not, probably it's not going to sell anything near what Halo Infinite is, it's arguably the game of the year. The best game of the year is arguably on Nintendo Switch this year. Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I just, you know, I was hoping for a little bit more creativity or support from third parties. And like, it is very clear that we're back to, we're not back to the N64 days, but it's like the Nintendo franchises count, you know, and then you've got a couple of standouts from classic partners like Atlus and Capcom that make the Switch great, right? Like Monster Hunter is a really big deal to be so central to Switch. And, you know, SMT5, obviously, now. But yeah, we're missing. I'm planning to play it on the flight over. I'm flying to Germany this weekend, so I'm gonna play a bunch of SMT5. But
make sure you have your console.
I'm missing some third party creativity, and you know, like there's no cool Switch experiment from Ubisoft this time, right? They always really early when a new Nintendo console comes out, they'll give us something interesting, like you know their take on Star Fox or their take on Mario, all of that. I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening there, whether we get a little bit more, because the Switch is a success. No company can now argue that they're waiting and seeing how Switch does. It's working really well. It's working really well for indies too. So
yeah,
I want to see some more third party support.
I mean, you can't argue that Switch is the absolute best way to play the hottest indies of 2016. I think I don't mean that in a mean way.
I'm just
like every
Hades came out on Switch first.
That's right.
It's great. Or there's so many, obviously there's so many indie games on Steam that maybe didn't get the chance to shine quite as brightly as they do on the Switch. And that's not a knock that, you know, a game from 2016 indie game is coming to Switch now or whatever. I can't think of any particular examples. I think it's actually awesome that the Switch has become this sort of indie powerhouse machine. And I think it's better than the alternative, like back in the day when Call of Duty came to every system, like including the Game Boy Advance and the Nintendo DS. It's good that they don't do that anymore.
The perfect companion system. You buy a PS5 and you buy a Switch and you're going to get a huge cross section of all the best games that are coming out at any given moment. And returning to your comment earlier, Per, about how maybe the Switch is kind of the same as Nintendo has been, where the tentpole Nintendo releases matter and then there's a smattering of third-party support. I agree to an extent, but indie has been the Switch's secret weapon this entire generation because indie games just work so darn well on the thing and they fill in so many gaps. And then even if you're just looking at this year's holiday season, we got Death's Door coming out on November 23rd, arguably one of the best games coming out this year. It's going to look great on Switch. And then you also have Eastward, which came out earlier this year. And I think it's one of the more underrated action RPGs. That game is freaking gorgeous on the Switch too. You got to play it on OLED. Oh my gosh. So like, yeah, there are actually a fair number of games that even if they are kind of flying a little more under the radar, I would say there's a pretty healthy indie selection and a real strong pipeline coming from Steam to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I think that's the big difference to the N64 and you know, later GameCube days is that there is this living, the eShop really came alive with Switch, right? Where an indie can come out 3 years after it debuted on Steam and actually find an audience and a really big audience on Switch too. I gotta play Eastward. I haven't played Eastward yet. I take your recommendation. I'll download that too. There's some interesting gems in Nintendo Switch's lineup that we don't talk about a lot, but like it's so weird to me. Like SnowRunner is on the Switch, and SnowRunner, you know, it's something that caught my eye when it, I think it hit Game Pass this year, and I played it, and it's basically it's a CarPG in a way where like the entire game is about getting your car unstuck from the mud and snow you know, using winches to pull out trailers. Wait, it's like it's a survival Switch game with cars. Yeah, and it's on Switch, right? Like they're these weird games that we don't talk about very often because they released with very little fanfare, and I'm sure they find some niche audiences within the Switch community as well. And like SnowRunner is a competent port, actually. A couple more, like when you start digging. Oh yeah, there we go.
Beautiful game.
I did not know this was on Switch. This game speaks to me on very many different levels.
It slaps. It's a great game.
It will make you so mad though. It's like what you're seeing right now is, you know, cars being stuck in water or in mud, and like that's what it's like. You're literally fighting for an hour with one hill. But it's just really fun. And like, I think it's a pretty good game to play on the go too.
Awesome. That reminds me, actually, speaking of pretty good games that we didn't put on the list, Loop Hero is coming to Switch on December 9th.
That's right. That's right. And
that was just announced on the day that we're recording this. So yep. That
the
is
best games of this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And since that game released, I've been wanting it to be on Switch. And then they announced that it is. And it was like, hooray. Now we know December 9th, this game is coming. And I love this game a whole lot. And I played it pretty much exclusively for like 2 weeks when it first came out. And then whatever, something happened. I saw a shiny predictive object in the distance and was drawn to that. But yeah.
Other video games.
So yeah, all the damn time. But no,
so what's perfect. Yeah, so what's left? We've got, obviously, we have Pokemon now. Yes. So that's a big one, albeit a re-release, of course, a remake, redo, whatever. And then we've got Big Brain Academy is about to hit to the demo is out right now, so anybody can play it. It is exactly, if you played the originals, you know, all the Big Brain and game and brain training titles, it's exactly like that. It works really well on Switch because of the touchscreen. It is, you can use your controller and select things, but it's just so much faster to just tap the screen. The demo is super limited. It just lets you play three different of these kind of brain teaser mini games. Like one is, you know, it shows you some objects and then you have to quickly find them on the screen and select them. Awesome. The other one is like, the other one is the balloon pop, which is a returning one where you have to pop the balloons in the order of the numbers. So like smallest number first, and then it starts going in the minus numbers and then it breaks your brain, all that. it's a really fun casual game, but it's not breaking any new ground, so it's kind of like a greatest hits re-release return. You can try out the demo,
see how that one does, since there's probably so many people who this will be their first introduction to the Big Brain Academy games, because Switch is sort of has almost the same audience that the Wii did, but there was nothing like this on Wii, and of course on DS. And so it'll be kind of interesting to see if that sort
such
of takes
a weird
off.
Artifact from the mid 2000s for Nintendo.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. It's like they basically invented. Well, it was something that was popular on phones too, but they invented this kind of genre of brain training games, and in a way created the digital version of the Sudoku craze for a while, and then it just kind of went away, right? Just like Wii Fit went away, and then comes back with Ring Fit and. We'll see if it does well. There are a couple of other games. There's Danganronpa Decadence is coming to Switch in December.
Oh.
Super Impossible Road, which is kind of like an extreme G-ish racing game that was popular on phones. There are a couple of notable, interesting games. There's a remaster of Pookie and Rocky. Mm-hmm. If you remember the old marvelous shooting game with the raccoon and the priestess. I love the original on the Super NES. That's still supposed to come this year. We'll see if it makes it.
There's a Monster Rancher 1 and 2 Anniversary Edition, I guess, that I literally just learned about today.
Yeah.
Because they're doing a tournament around it or something like that. I was like, oh, that's a Monster Rancher.
Yeah, that's in December. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Is still supposed to come. Aren't we getting Outer Wilds 2 on Switch?
I thought we were. Like, I know that the DLC is out now, but I'm not sure about Outer Wilds. It might already be out. Not sure.
Oh, God.
One thing I want to highlight is I said that Nintendo exceeded expectations with the Switch OLED and Metroid Dread. One area did not exceed expectations and was a whole thing for an entire week was the Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pass.
Yeah.
And we, at the time, kind of were going, ooh, so we're getting that much of a jump in terms of the actual amount of money, and we're getting some pretty bad N64 ports, or very mixed, very variable N64 ports. And until GTA Trilogy came around, people were fairly mad about that. And then everybody got mad about GTA Trilogy instead. Yeah. So I think that is one area in which Nintendo fell flat a little bit.
Yeah.
And the question that I have is, did the DLC, the Happy Home Paradise DLC, ultimately make it worth it?
I think so. Like as someone who, you know, disconnected from Animal Crossing, wanted a reason to come back, I'm having a lot of fun with it. And, you know, also the free DLC update gave me some new stuff to do. So I do think it's worth it. And like, if one of the strategies is to bundle the DLC for free, right? Like they could have bundled the Hyrule Warriors DLC as well. I think that's a kind of a cool plan because it encourages, first of all, it supports Nintendo's first party efforts, which are the most popular games. And it gives you, maybe gives you additional incentive to check those games out, but more importantly, revisit them because you're getting this as a value.
Yeah.
And then Kat, the other thing around Switch Online is that it's just so poorly defined. Like I understand Game Pass, you know, Xbox Live Gold, you know, PlayStation's, you know, Plus lineup. Like you kind of like they built up this expectation that there is a small number of games that hit every month, and then Game Pass obviously is a little different. And you understand what you're paying for with Switch Online. It's still so confusing because we're sitting here asking, would it be a good strategy to bundle DLC? And was it a good strategy? We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know if this will ever be repeated or if it was just a carrot to get you in and then hope that you forget that you subscribe. And then with N64 and Genesis games, yeah, they showed us Paper Mario and Banjo-Kazooie on the horizon, but no indication as to when, no idea of cadence. Like, do we get a new game every month? Do we not see games for 6 months and I'm just paying for nothing? Like, it's so strange. I don't understand it.
We get our PS Plus and our Game Pass games on kind of a fixed schedule every month. We know when to expect new stuff. And Nintendo will announce in a press release at 5 p.m. on a Thursday that they're releasing some new NES games like Joe and Mac.
Yep.
Enjoy.
Or Mac 2.
What?
No, and it's the Advent calendar concept, right? I don't know if you guys grew up with Advent calendars where you open a little door every day, right? Like very popular in Europe. Yeah, and it's I got one for my wife, so we need to make sure that the kids don't eat everything before that day. But you know what to expect. And it's not that the chocolate is better, but you anticipate opening the door and seeing what the shape is and getting your chocolate every day. And that's how these services work. You're looking forward to the announcement of what will be included next month. With Game Pass, you're looking forward to seeing what game you don't have to buy, like which major game will be included in the service at launch. Like
buy that's now free.
Well, I mean, they do tell you in advance, right? Like you knew Forza Horizon 5 was going to be included, so you didn't have to buy it unless you wanted to play it early, which is nickel and dime.
Oh, no, I meant more whatever. Like PlayStation. Yeah. It seems like on the PlayStation 3 games, it's like, oh, I just bought this game 6 weeks ago.
All with PS Plus, because the games are not there at launch, right? So you do get that where you go like, well, you know, as a hardcore gamer, you might have bought a bunch of that stuff, but you still anticipate the announcement of what's included. And with Nintendo Online, it's like,
when was the last time that they did a drop other than, you know, for the N64 and the Genesis earlier, but
in a while,
those really bad Super NES games that we're joking about last episode.
Yeah. I feel, and I might've just, made this memory up, but I feel like when they announced Nintendo Switch Online, they said we were going to get monthly, you know, additions.
No, you're making that up.
Yeah, see, that was
they did the don't worry about it thing.
You're only like, that's what you want. And then also, I mean, they've data mined a whole bunch of games that will be coming at some point. But the DLC, which, by the way, I really enjoy the Happy Home Paradise DLC. It's been more fun than I expected, and it adds so much premium furniture, and it's had some really wonderful interactions with my villagers. Great piece of content. It feels like a throw-in to this. Like they looked at it and were like, you know, I don't think N64 and Sega Genesis games are going to get enough people to sign up for a higher tier.
Yeah.
Let's throw in a Animal Crossing DLC.
Get
people to buy.
I mean, I guarantee you the discussion with any subscription service internally at a company always starts with, hey, we need to raise prices. You know, we need to make more from the audience.
More money.
Yeah. And like when you have third party games included, right, you owe royalties to those third parties. And so the cost of a service like that, unless you drop games out, will just keep on increasing. Right. So you get to a point, you know, that's why Netflix drops movies all the time. Right. You get to a point where they have to raise the cost to make it worth their while to keep paying third parties.
Yeah.
But it's like, as a consumer, I don't care, right? Like, I need you to tell me what is the value, because I already forgot that you had some third-party games 2 years ago on the service.
Yeah. Game Pass drops games out. We just don't really think of it as that. Mm-hmm. I think of Game Pass as like, oh, I've got access to these games forever. But no, games, yeah, it's like Netflix. Games will leave.
Exactly.
The Game Pass service. But what was your ranking for their holiday, or your grading?
My grading?
Yeah,
I would give it a B+. And first of all, Metroid Dread is just fantastic. And like, I don't want it to sound like Metroid Dread gets a B+ from me. That's an A game. It's absolutely wonderful. Completely just passed my expectations. Like, I didn't know that team could make a game that great. And I like the DLC. I like the Switch OLED, but it comes with a caveat that it's just a more expensive system with a nicer screen, right? Like, they
harder to
and that that's what ultimately pushes down my rating a little bit. You know, I like Mario Party, but it is a return to the classics. I like Pokemon, but it's a return to the classics. That's why I'm not A. What did you have? E cat?
I was E.
E.
And I am going to give Nintendo's holiday season a 7 out of 10, which is
good. Okay. Yeah.
It's good on the IGN.
You're a little lower than us.
Well, because 8 is great. I don't think it's great. I think it's good.
On a 7 to 10 scale, that means that Nintendo's holiday season was bad. It was very bad.
No. I'm 7-ish too. But again,
really?
I've not played SMT5, so
I think it's pretty good. Like, I've been playing, yeah. Okay. I play all the consoles, right? I play Xbox a lot. I've been playing a lot of Forza. I've been playing Persona 5 on my PS5 because outside of Deathloop, it hasn't really felt like there's been much. Like, yeah. I would give PS5's holiday an F, honestly.
And
then you look at Nintendo's holiday season. I feel like I've got so much to play at any given time between Mario Party, all these indies, SMT5. I really, really enjoyed Metroid Dread. Like, for a system that is in year 4 of its cycle and is still continuing to generally push out good content at
it's midway through its
solid
life cycle.
Cadence.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's been great. It's good holiday season for Nintendo, okay. I think.
Yeah, I think PlayStation had a very weak holiday season, but like, you know, the double punch of Forza and Halo for Xbox is really strong. Mm-hmm. That's like their biggest franchise, and then that is probably the best racing game ever made, all hitting within the time span of a month.
Xbox trying to pull a Nintendo 2017.
Yeah, and then they do have, like, I'm really enjoying Far Cry and stuff like that. So they do have these strong, good-looking third-party titles as well. And, like, I'm still playing Psychonauts and stuff like that,
Call of Duty
so,
Vanguard is really bad this year.
I think the multiplayer is very fun.
Were quite weak.
I'm skipping them both. Yep.
Well, that's good because they're not on Switch anyway. So that was our grading of the Nintendo holiday season. I forgot to mention it's again the Black Friday offerings, which is a lot of their first party games are going to be $40, and they'll probably be less than that on places like Walmart because Walmart is sneaky and they'll just cut them right out. Also, the Nintendo Switch bundle with Mario Kart is back. So if somebody doesn't have Mario Kart somehow, like maybe they just, I don't know, arrived on Earth. And
people are still buying it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the attach rate of that game is incredible, and this bundle certainly helps. So as far as Black Friday, they're doing all right. There's going to be a lot of chances to get Nintendo games of all time on the cheap. So,
and for people who've never owned a Switch, who are probably not listening to the show, but you know, it's not the OLED version that's in the bundle. It is the longer battery version. Yes, and so remember that the difference between the Switch OLED and the standard model is just the on-the-go experience. The screen is much, much nicer. Yeah. So if you plan to play a lot on the go, the SWOLED is worth shelling out the extra dough for waiting for. Otherwise,
nobody talks about
how
much better that kickstand is.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it, and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
The kickstand is fantastic.
It's a great kickstand.
Yeah.
Yep. Big improvement.
It's not a rickety, terrifyingly fragile piece of rice paper that is holding up your $300 video game system.
So. No, it was not. Yep.
Now we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the best games ever made in the history of the universe. And today, wow. Kat is going to be regaling us with tales of Super Mario Brothers 3.
Oh, spoiler alert. No, we were talking a little bit earlier about Mario, and let me tell you, Super Mario Brothers has to be on this list because it's one of the most important games of the ever. And Super Mario Brothers 3 more so has to be on this list because not only is it the best Mario game, not only is it the best Nintendo game, it is one of the best games ever made. It is freaking gorgeous. It is as AAA as you could possibly get in 1990. It dramatically increased the scope and the scale of Mario 1 and Mario 2, adding so many power-ups, having so many world maps, having so many secrets to find. It holds up magnificently in this day and age. But more to the point, it is one of the tightest games I have played and continue to play. We talk about how tight Metroid Dread is. That's the case for Super Mario Brothers 3. These levels, each one is this tiny little miraculous gem of a wonderful design. And they're so varied and they're so interesting, going from world 1, where you start out with kind of a normal thing, to world 4, where it's like everything's gigantic and you have the snow level and the plant level. And then you get to world 8, where Bowser is apparently on the warpath and you have these insane tank and airship and naval levels. Right? It is Mario. This is Nintendo leaving it all on the table. Like, they're just saying, this is it. We're throwing everything in here. And to the extent that Super Mario World, in some ways, was kind of regarded as lesser at the time, because it was almost like Nintendo was exhausted after throwing so much into Super Mario Brothers 3. Not only that, Super Mario Brothers 3 is freaking hard. Yeah. Especially once you get to World 7 and World 8. This game is one of the toughest Mario platforming challenges in the entire series. It's an exquisite, iconic Nintendo experience. And I think for my money, Mario just has never been better.
Yeah, I'm watching the video of Super Mario Brothers 3, and it's making me want to play it so...
I know.
Right now, I'm thinking of all the great... The fact that Mario would wear suits, I don't know why, for whatever reason, when I was a kid, that just excited me so much. The fact that he would just wear a little costume and turn into a frog and have all the abilities...
Now he's a raccoon. Now he's a hammer brother.
Now he's a tanuki. I don't know what that is, but it turns into a statue because I don't know anything about Japanese mythology and there was really no way for me to find out in 1990. Yeah, and on top of the fact that it's some of the best sprites on the NES, and it is. It's massively difficult. It's just so fun. I remember the lead... Oh, I forgot about the Hammer Brother suit. That's another great one.
It rules. I would get the Game Genie and put in the Hammer Brothers code. I didn't ever want to be anything but the Hammer Brother.
It's a great suit. And then you have something like completely off the wall, like Kuribu's shoe, which is just a giant shoe that you can bounce around in and not, you know, and not be damaged level. By spikes. Yeah.
That's so much fun.
Yeah. That's my favorite, probably my favorite power up in like any Mario game because it's so absurd. It's just a giant Kuribu's shoe, which is, I think, that's the Japanese name for Goomba, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's such a, I mean, you have to put it in the context of when it released too. Companies weren't making side-scrolling games that where you were able to go everywhere. That, you know, if you go back to the original Mario Brothers, you can't go back, right? It can't remember what's on the left side of your screen. And so you kind of have to forge ahead. And Super Mario Brothers 3 just doesn't go right and left, it goes up and down in all these different directions and then creates this perfect playground where any power up changes the gameplay experience. And then the kind of like the presentation of the kind of like stage setup and everything with the, you know, when you exit the level, how you like literally exit the world and hit the block there. It's just so well designed from beginning to end. Full disclosure, I'm more of a Super Mario World guy. Like that game to me epitomizes the Mario franchise when it comes to just kind of tweaking everything to such perfection and the music, the sound, you know, obviously the power of the Super NES making all those Mode 7 effects possible too is what endeared that game. But I'm also completely cognizant that it just took everything that worked so well about Super Mario Brothers 3 and put a little bit more of a shiny coat of paint on it. And so you really have to appreciate like Super Mario Brothers 3 just did so many things incredibly well.
Well, it's perfect that you mentioned Super Mario World because I was going to bring that up as one of the all-time greatest Nintendo games of all time. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a little bit better than Super Mario Brothers 3. I know, shocking, but I couldn't really
those people
decide.
Mario World hipsters have taken over the world.
Uh-huh. I mean, I will not deny that I have hipster tendencies. I'm looking at my vinyl collection right over here, like the biggest jerk. Most of them are video game soundtracks, okay? But yeah, Super Mario World, just it was such an incredible introduction into the 16-bit era for many of us like me who were such Nintendo fanboys at the time. The idea of playing on a Genesis, are you kidding me? I would have rather been dragged out into the street and beaten savagely with a hose or something than to be seen playing Genesis. So I held off. It might be a surprise that I was such a fanboy, but I held off. And then, you know, my brother and I, we worked all summer to raise the money to buy a Super Nintendo. And then we finally hooked it up. Your parents help you set it up. And mm-hmm. we put in Super Mario World and it was like unbelievable. We had all these effects that we had never seen before. There's the transparency effects of the fog in the haunted houses. There are all the, like Per was saying, the Mode 7 effects, especially when you...
the clown car.
When you fight Bowser at the end. Yeah, there's the great Mode 7 effects. They just put every trick that they wanted to put in to sell the Super NES into Super Mario World. But on top of just being like the visual trickery and the impressiveness and colorfulness, you know, that was offered to it by the expanded color palette, things of that nature, it's just a great game. It's so fun. And it has, all these weird, random Super Mario Brothers secrets that don't make any sense. Like, what is it? When you beat the Star Road, it just turns into autumn and there's pumpkins and things around for some reason, which at the time that I played it and opened up that level of the world, it tricked me into thinking that the Nintendo somehow knew that it was October.
No, okay. Nope. Always looks the same.
I was a kid. But Animal Crossing. Like 13. Yeah, but I was like, oh my God, the Super Nintendo knows that it's the autumn now.
Yeah, you need to buy a disk drive add-on for there to be a clock. No, but there's so many elements in Super Mario World that just elevated beyond the NES era Mario games for me. And the one is Yoshi. The concept, you know, you had transformations before and you had cool flying controls and all of that. But with Yoshi, the game not only felt differently, like running into an enemy changed the game. Like having to recapture Yoshi who's running away is such a brilliant concept. You're not just taking a hit or losing him. You have to like chase after him. He could walk on things that Mario couldn't walk on. The way the way it pops enemies is just so satisfying. But then the coolest thing is being able to get extra height by jumping off Yoshi to get to something like sacrificing Yoshi. You gotta come up with that stuff. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Be clear, I think Mario World is an exquisite game. One of the finest platformers ever made. I loved it. I still love it. I still really enjoy playing it. If there's anything that annoys me, it's that for some reason, Mario 3 doesn't seem to get its due anymore when people talk about Mario World. They're like,
You're right. Yeah,
Mario 3 was great, but Mario World was better. And I say, maybe not, because if you look back at the development history, Mario World was actually, it kind of was under the gun to develop it. The development team weren't entirely happy with it. Miyamoto himself was not very happy with how Mario World turned out. And it's only in hindsight that we say, oh, wow, this game is incredible. There are a few things that annoy me about Mario World, and I kind of hate dragging it, honestly. But when I look at it, I go, okay, well, the environments are a little repetitive, especially compared to Super Mario Brothers 3. I don't think the cape is as good as the Tanuki suit.
No, I will 100% agree with you on that, yeah.
And the levels themselves just aren't as interesting or as challenging or as dynamic as the actual Mario 3 levels. Like Mario 3 to me is like the perfect kind of encapsulation of perfect Mario platforming design. Mario World is more about open-ended exploration, especially with finding all of the different secret exits and everything.
The exits were so good.
So much to find in this game, truly. It has different strengths, but like my preference is for Mario 3.
No, I totally understand that. I totally get the Mario 3 over Mario World crowd too. But I think it might also just have something to do with which game you played first, which game you played more, you know, which games your friends played. And like, as somebody who really appreciated sound design in gaming machines, because I loved the Commodore 64 SID chip before the Super NES, I just really love the way the tunes sound in Super Mario World and like the kind of fake instruments they created. They're so iconic now when you hear like the diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle stuff.
Oh, the ragtime. Yeah.
Nothing sounds like that. They're not trying to make it sound like a piano. It's like, it just sounds like Mario. And I love that game to pieces.
Yeah. It's definitely has the best ragtime soundtrack of any game.
Yeah,
the ragtime.
Why doesn't Mario have that wonderful of music anymore?
Yeah,
once New Super Mario Brothers came out, the music got notably worse. Mario World's music was wonderful, and I still love listening to it to this day.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's Super Mario World should be on any top gaming list, very close to the top, and it's up to you to decide whether it should be ahead of Super Mario Brothers 3. I'm gonna put them at a tie. There, how's that? That's cheating. That's the coward's way out. But
nice.
All right. We're going to talk now to the audience. Because it's Thanksgiving, and we know that everybody loves question block. So we have a mega Thanksgiving question block. We took questions from the Facebook group, and here they are to be answered now by the crew. So, Guy Elnathan, not sure, says, I've been waiting to hear the crew's thoughts on the original Super NES Mario RPG. In my opinion, it's a masterpiece, not only within the Mario RPG universe, but as an RPG in general. I really loved it and feel like all the games after it truly never lived up to its legacy. Truly a timeless classic. What does the crew think? I just want to say I have to bow out because I never played Super Mario RPG on the Super.
You should play it at least once.
You played it once?
I know. You should play it at least.
Oh, I know. It's on my NES Super NES Classic, which I always handy by. So
the first time I ever played Mario RPG was during a sleepover in which we played through the entire thing over the course of the evening.
And what is that possible?
Yeah,
it's actually quite short.
It's very easy too. Yep.
Oh,
one of the things that I like about a good RPG is when it's less than 10 hours. Yeah, that's good stuff.
See, this was developed with Square, correct?
Yes.
It was,
Okay,
it was
I always just assumed it was going to be an 80-hour RPG. Then
it's historically significant in the sense that this was the last real partnership between Nintendo and Square before they had their big breakup.
Right.
And Square went over to the Sony PlayStation. And it's actually kind of remarkable how Square took Mario, the concepts of Mario, and expanded on it so much in a way that felt really faithful to the franchise still. This feels like a Mario game, but it has a sense of humor. The writing is really great. It actually does really great stuff with Peach. I really enjoy how much more agency Peach has. It's almost like setting up her character development in Mario Odyssey, if you want to say it that way. They do fun things with Bowser. It's great. The only thing I don't particularly like about it is I'm not a big fan of the bonus characters from Square. I don't like Mallow and all of them. And I didn't want them. I don't want Geno and Smash Brothers. Sorry.
I'm actually completely with you. They always felt like they weren't from the same universe, but I know there are lots of fans who like those characters because of this game. And, you know, I hear you. It's a classic. I love this. And I remember when it came out, I was thinking, oh my God, now Square and Nintendo are going to keep making these games. They're going to get better and better. Just like Final Fantasy got better over the years, forever and ever. And then right? The great Nintendo 64 developer exodus happened. And so when a sequel was announced and Intelligent Systems obviously took over development on it. And I would argue that Paper Mario actually is the better game. And, you know, I get it. People have nostalgia for this title and they wanted it to continue like that. And Paper Mario is very, very different. You know, art style and combat and all of that is very, very different. But I think actually the direction it went to with Paper Mario is the better one. And I like that game better. But I would absolutely love to see them try this again. And like, there's nothing that stands in the way of Nintendo doing this again, except for pride.
Yeah.
But like,
you know,
don't you,
is that what it is? You think it's pride?
Don't you think if Nintendo called up Mr. Square and said, hey, let's do another one, they would, like, of course they'd do it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But that breach really created a lot of hard feelings.
Yeah, but
Nintendo and Square, you don't forget readily.
But Octopath Traveler is on the system and it looks beautiful. And like, if they told that team,
they still work together.
Yeah, if they told that team, how about we do a Mario RPG together, and like, they could
be into it.
They can, if Nintendo can figure out the financials with Ubisoft, I'm sure they can do it with one of their oldest allies.
True.
Thousand Year Door is the best one in the series. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. It is a confirmed classic Super Mario RPG that I have not played. But I have it in here.
You should play it. It's on the SNES. SNES
now that I know it's only 10 hours, I'm actually very interested. Let's
knock it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just do it.
It's also on SNES Online, right? On the Switch?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think that it is.
No, I don't think so.
That's Earthbound. What an omission.
Yeah. Conspicuous absence.
Drag and drop from wherever, you know, whoever Nintendo is the keeper of all of these files. And just,
yeah,
I know that's how easy it is. Just drag and drop. I'm joking, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I know it takes hard work. Joshua Timchin asked a question we actually touched a little bit on last week. What game should the Game and Watch should get the Game and Watch treatment for 2022? Metroid seems obvious, but maybe Kirby? And I think that Kirby would probably be a better fit for the Game and Watch format, even than Metroid, but I would love to have both of them. But I'm thinking like a cute little pink one of these that has like a cute little Kirby mm-hmm. clock and maybe sucks up the numbers when the hour changes.
It's a very small screen, right? So it definitely, you know, some of the racing games maybe aren't as easy to play on it as these side scrollers. So I think Kirby or any game with large characters would be a really good choice. Kirby would really work. They have a variety of titles to pick from. With Metroid, they could do the two NES Metroids and Super Metroid. Is that asking too much?
Metroid
horsepower and storage, not in the cards.
GBA instead. Metroid Zero Mission.
Okay, there you go. That'd be really good. Yeah. I like it.
I haven't been following. When the original Mario Game & Watch came out, there's a YouTube channel, I think it's called Stack Smashing, where he just instantly took it apart and was like, oh, you can't hack this with a USB connection unless you do all these crazy complicated like electrical engineering things that he got Doom running on it and things of that nature. But I haven't seen if the Zelda Game & Watch is hackable yet. So I'm kind of thinking it's probably not. The USB is only for power. There's no lines.
Everything is hackable. They'll unscrew the back and attach little wires.
Well, yeah, that's what he did. It's just pretty amazing. I highly recommend checking it out. The channel, I believe, is called Stack Smashing. It's very interesting. He was the first person to open it up and just make it dance and do the things that he wanted.
I would be into a Kirby Game & Watch.
And yeah, me too.
I actually sort of think that Kirby doesn't get enough respect.
I agree with you on that 100%. Yeah, Kirby's kind of...
Kirby's Adventure and Kirby's Dream Land, maybe a couple others would be a great add. Kirby's Adventure in particular, if Mario 3 is the best game on the original NES, Kirby's Adventure is up there. It's like one of the top five. Like, yeah. It's so big. It's so pretty. There's so much to find. And Kirby himself is such a wonderful and dynamic character. Adding in the conceit where you could swallow the enemies and then steal their powers and being able to fly around. And of course, Kirby is an elder god, as we learned in Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Uh-huh. So,
I hear you. I just feel like both the Kirby and the Yoshi series have some high points, but also have some marked low points where it's not quite up to the Nintendo seal of quality. Whereas like Mario, I feel like even the worst Mario game is a great, great game, right? And like Kirby is uneven, and sometimes those secondary franchises, and maybe it's the HAL games, they can't decide whether they want to make a game for kids or they want to also keep the old school gamers happy with some sort of difficulty to go back to. But
I got two more pitches.
All right, what do you got?
Pokemon.
Okay. Pokemon would be
that'd be big.
Yeah.
But then you can't trade and all that.
No, you could trade with other Game & Watches.
Okay, so you do support that over the cable. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. USB-C to USB-C connection. Yeah.
And there you go. Mm-hmm. The other one is Fire Emblem. Put the Fire Emblem, the original Fire Emblem on there, and then maybe GBA Fire Emblem, Blazing Sword with Lin and all of them on there as well.
That would be, the GBA, obviously. GBA, we have to thank for actually making Fire Emblem a thing in the West, right? And like, but I'm still holding out hope that Nintendo will just go back and, you know, translate everything, Thracia, all that, and
we need a remake of Genealogy of the Holy War. That is the one that everybody always, in Japan, that is the most popular one. That's the one that everybody's like, oh, it's the best one.
So. I have all the cartridges in Japanese, and they're so, I love those games
so much. That's the entry from which all of Fire Emblem, as we know it today, basically sprang from. So, but Americans haven't played it, and I think Americans kind of deserve to play this one.
Dang it. I mean, we have the first one. They translated it, and it's...
Yeah, and I enjoyed it, actually. It was like playing Dragon Quest, but in tactics RPG.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, like, my mind was racing. I'm like, oh, what if they partnered with a third party? It wouldn't make any sense, but wouldn't it be cool to have, like,
Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest Game & Watches or Final Fantasy Game & Watches or, you know, Ninja Gaiden Trilogy or Mega Man 2.
They haven't even got the freaking Final Fantasy Pixel remasters on the Switch yet. So
exactly. It's just not powerful enough for this stuff.
Right. It can't run. Those rendering those fonts is too much.
Oh my God. It's the worst. I got Final Fantasy V sitting on my Switch or on my PC. Sorry. I almost let a slip out there. Oof. No, I got Final Fantasy V Pixel Remaster sitting on my PC, and I actually really want to play through that one because I've never finished it.
Oh, I love that game. I'm about that. So good.
It's a classic.
I bought the first one on my phone, Final Fantasy I, and I was actually very pleasantly surprised with how it is. It looks nice. It plays. It's fun. It's just like mindless grinding on my phone, which is all I need from life. But
you play Final Fantasy IV, the best one? No, sorry.
That is. I don't know if I would say that was the best one, but it's a very... So we have time for one more question. I'm trying to get one that's like, that's a real good. Nico Fuglesong asks, hey, NVC, when do you think Mario Kart 9 will release? Did Nintendo release it for the Switch or wait for the next system?
For the next system.
Waiting for the next system. And Mario Kart 8 Deluxe just cannot be stopped. I'm pretty sure it's in the top 10 list of sell of games sold every month. And they don't even count the digital downloads.
We as gamers may not think of it that way, but they gave us another Mario Kart, obviously, right? You just had to drive toy cars around your apartment, right?
That's
so true. They did check in on the franchise, which to them probably is enough. And 8 just keeps selling. And while it's doing that, they're not going to do a new one. I think the next system will launch with Mario Kart 9.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense because Mario Kart 8 launching with the Switch, more so maybe even than Breath of the Wild, ended up being such a system seller because you were talking earlier about the attachment rate. It's a perfect Switch game.
Yeah.
It works perfectly in handheld mode. It's gorgeous, looks great on that screen. And it's a great party game. It is everything. Yeah. It's like a proof of concept for the Switch in a way that maybe even Breath of the Wild isn't.
It's a 10 out of 10 game for me. Like Patrick Coppins was asking, like, what Nintendo game are you most thankful for? And I was really torn between Breath of the Wild because it mixes up everything and was very courageous in taking a different route for a Zelda game instead of just doing what they know they've done in the past and are good at. But Mario Kart 8 is, I think, the one for me because it's like... it's so thoughtfully designed. It did all these great things. And then the deluxe edition brought back battle mode. And then we had these crossovers with Zelda and Animal Crossing and F-Zero. It's like the Smash Brothers of racing games in that it just celebrates all of Nintendo's greatest franchises in one package. And it's just the control. Whenever another company makes a kart racer, I always feel like Mario Kart just did it right, and they all feel like they're kind of pale copies in some way. Not to say they're not good.
That's why I was going off on multiverses last week.
Yeah.
I was like, look, you can try and be Smash Brothers, but that game has a feel to it.
Yeah, it's superficial at best.
Free-to-play game. Just it's hard for me to imagine.
And Mario Kart is like one of those examples where it is so accessible for everybody to play. Obviously, you know, there's the rubber banding mechanics and the kind of like the Mario Party, you know, bullet equalizer kind of thing. But it's just like a really good player can do things. Like there's so much depth to the drift system and everything. It's rare that you get a game this thoroughly designed and, you know, let's face it. This game was designed and tweaked twice, right? It came out and was already great, and then it got made better with the DX edition. So,
And then, of course,
Mario Kart 9, though, when it comes out, bring back Double Dash.
Yeah, that would be so great. I would love that.
It really needs to be ultimate.
I have to point out also that the music, the like jazzy sort of rearrangements of existing Nintendo music is phenomenal. And probably some
of those courses are so fun. Like Mario Kart 8 courses, the way that they use gravity and everything. And people say, oh, bring back F-Zero in so many ways. Mario Kart 8 kind of did in its own weird way.
Unfortunately, we are out of time for this week, for this very special holiday episode where we all shared a little bit, learned a little bit, and laughed a little bit. That's it. That's all the time we have for NVC this week. So make sure to follow us on Twitter at NVC Podcast. submit your questions to nvc@ign.com or on the post on the NVC Facebook page. We don't have a guest this week, so I don't have to thank them, but I do want to thank Red on the ones and twos and Logan behind the scenes. Most of all, thanks to you for hanging out with us. Remember, NVC is the only place where you can
get the thing. Stuffing.
Get the or the dressing for those of you in Louisiana.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.